Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Peter Paul Berzoa, and welcome to a rainy day in California, at least Northern California. We had a guest. I hope he comes on. Tony Ward has a great radio voice. I don't know where he's at. But anyway, we'll carry on, as the Brits say. It has been Fleet Week here in San Francisco. It's one of the poorest attended, and for a lot of reasons. And also, the Navy sent one, I guess it's a MAT ship. It wasn't a battleship or cruiser or frigate. And we had a ship from Canada, I guess a Coast Guard, one of their Coast Guard vehicles and vessels, and we had one of our own. And we had, and then, of course, what's Dr. the Jeremiah O'Brien. Today, I think this date is correct. In 1775, the Continental Congress authorized the building of a Navy. So this is the Navy's, over 200 years they've been in existence. Incidentally, the oldest intelligence services in service in the United States is the Navy. The Navy has had an intelligence service since God knows when, and they've broken codes, the infamous purple code that the Japanese used in World War II, and there's some controversy about whether or not we knew, because it broke the code, that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor. Also, today in 1792, and this is Barack Obama is a beneficiary of this, controversial though it may be, George Washington laid the cornerstone for the Executive Mansion. In 1845, Texas ratified a constitution. It's a very unique constitution. Drew Raines got into it and on his show, Marines Disquisition, and you ought to look at it, and it's a great reform item for people who think that the states need to overhaul their constitutions and their regulations, and maybe we should have a unicameral one house. I don't know why we need two houses in the state legislature. It just adds to the expense of government and invites more corruption and more opportunity for genteel graft. In 1862, one of my favorite historical characters or politicians, statesmen, Otto von Bismarck, the Chancellor of Germany, who created out of Prussia the modern Germany, he gave his famous or infamous, depending on how you want to look at it, blood and iron speech, in which he laid out, set out the parameters of what modern Germany was going to be under his administration and the Kaiser Wilhelm I. In 1864, we had Maryland, after the Emancipation Proclamation, they ratified a measure to abolish slavery. I guess it still would be considered a southern state. Some other people think it's something else, considering what goes on in that state. And we unfortunately have one of the most controversial politicians currently on the scene, Nancy D'Alessandro Pelosi, who was from Maryland. Her father was mayor of Baltimore, and a lot of people wish she'd go back there and stay. See, what else happened today? Oh, yes. In 1958, Pope Pius XII, a controversial figure in the Roman Catholic Church, he was buried, and those of you who are familiar with the history of Nazi Germany, or should be familiar with it, it is claimed that he overlooked, he was a papal nuncio, a papal ambassador when he was a cardinal named Pacelli, and he was in Nazi Germany and Austria, and he understood, or people thought he should have understood, that Hitler was going to overrun Europe and manipulate the both churches, the Lutheran and the Catholic Church. In fact, one of the tenets of Nazism is that not only the army, but the clergy had to take an oath to the Nazi state. So we're hoping this doesn't happen over here with this increasingly these moves toward totalitarianism. In 1975, this is relevant, the Nobel Peace Prize, when it was respected, there's a lot of controversy, as you know, about Obama getting it, Andrei Sakharov, the famous Russian scientist who was working for peace and coexistence and human rights in Russia. He received the award in 1975, and he kept the KGB tried to shut him up, and when they couldn't shut him up, they exiled him to Gorky. I think he died in 1989. But that was a time when the Nobel Peace Prize was respected, and the recipient Sakharov, in that case, really deserved it, as Mother Teresa and some other people. We can't say the same for that Bolivian woman. It turns out that may be another one of the frauds of these international prizes, and it does happen. Let's see, what else today? Oh, yeah, 1958, I think she's a senior senator from Washington State. Maria Cantwell was born. She's going to be very important because she's going to be one of the people, we don't know her views, who's going to vote on this so-called massive overhaul of the national health care, or the health care as Americans know it, and some of us want to keep it, but with reforms. So that, it's not much happening. Oh, and when one of the most infamous Roman emperors was, he ascended the Roman, I guess you could call it the throne, or he considered himself a god, that's Nero. Of course, and there's a famous, great movie with Peter Ustinov, Quo Vadis. I recommend that to people who want to follow an interesting part of Roman history. Very entertaining, and Peter Ustinov was a great Nero. One of the things, I don't know where Tony Hall is, but the surplus military land has long been the target of real estate developers or real estate racketeers. We had a base that I'm very familiar with because I had to go on to it when I was a Vietnam War draft advisor for students. Was Fort Sheridan in Illinois. It's on the north shore of Cook County and near Highland Park, which is one of the ritzy suburbs. But the that was the Fifth Army's base, and when that closed, the developers were rubbing their hands with glee, and they turned it into expensive so-called affordable housing. Well, we've had the situation here in San Francisco. A lot of people don't know that California, the federal government, owned about 70% of the land. And the Nixon, and after World War II, in fact, Mayor George Christopher, who I knew for many years, and we'll run some of his interviews that I did for Western Public Radio, I asked him about this, that after World War II, the Presidio, which was the headquarters of the 6th Army base, and it was a controversial base during the Vietnam War, a lot of protests there. The realty people and realtors and the real estate developers wanted to take over the Presidio and develop it, and they claimed that it would put about $250 million on the San Francisco city and county tax rolls. Well, Nancy Pelosi finally, after the Nixon administration, when the move to what they call base closure and realignment, a lot of bases around the country were closed and developed as some for affordable housing, and some of these projects were worthy. Others, I don't think Acorn got anything, but like Hamilton Air Force Base up near Novato in Northern California, that was closed, and the Presidio. And Nancy Pelosi and her developer friends, the John Stewart Company, very controversial developer who was involved in the Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae controversies, and his management company, a lot of controversy. They got their hands on a lot of the property there, and I have put it up on amicusveritas.org, or you can type in and Google Verzola, VERZOLA.com, and that'll roll over very quickly to my master web pages, the New Shadows master web pages. A lot of the controversies that have been censored and suppressed, or been some of the media people lied about it, what really goes on are misrepresented in print and in broadcast. Showing who got those properties, and you know, officers' billets were among the finest in the world. San Francisco is very unusual, and from a point of view that it's one of the most desirable places. It was for the military to be posted here, and also for diplomats. In fact, when I did the diplomatic beat for KALW-FM on the Western Public Radio, went around to consular gatherings and parties, and you know, I had a lot of fun, met a lot of people. Several of the consular people who had been stationed, say, in places like Bangladesh or remote outer Mongolia told me unequivocally that a posting in San Francisco, a diplomatic posting in San Francisco, was better than having an ambassadorship to outer Mongolia. It's really a great place. Unfortunately, San Francisco has lost a lot. I think the Australians have fled the city. Several others. And what is relevant, Pakistan does not have a consulate here, but many years ago, several years ago, the last commanding general of the Bengal Lancers, and I will get that part of that interview up on the web, still got to edit it down, Brigadier Francis Ingalls was the honorary consul for Pakistan here in San Francisco. And after he'd retired from the British Army, he stayed in India for a while and then in Pakistan, which he loved. He spent 40 years up there, and in fact, his classmate at Sandhurst, the British West Point, was David Niven. And a lot of history between those two. They just released in color and on DVD The Charge of the Light Brigade, the original version done with Errol Flynn and David Niven, and it deals in part with the Russian, the Tsar at the time, political manipulations on what was called the Northwest Frontier, which is which was Afghanistan and Pakistan and part of Bangladesh, I guess, today, because there has been so many political subdivisions and upheavals. But, again, what he said, and I believe this to be true as a student of Afghanistan and its history, and because of the animals and the veterinary stuff that I've done, that the British sent up four armies, four military campaigns, and every one of them got their British butts beat. It was just a hopeless situation up there, and unless we're prepared to put a million men in there, it's because of the terrain and the tribal relationships and the treachery, it's just not a viable military proposition. He did suggest, and a lot of other military people think, that the best thing for that situation is to contain it, like we did after World War II with the Russian bear in Europe. You know, just a change of strategy, not that we're giving up to stop the spread of Islamic militarism. And an interesting lexicon, look at, you know, is it correct to say war on terror? Can you make a war on an idea? Or is it war on terrorists? So that the semanticists can have fun with that, but it's come up, and we need to think clearly, as Barack Obama says, let me be clear. You know, he seems to use that phrase quite a bit, and of course the semanticists want to have fun with that, think, well, was he not clear before? And other people who use that, it's like saying, to be honest with you, so I always come back and say, were you dishonest with me before? You really need to think about how you phrase and utter your utterances, because there's this kind of double talk you expect from diplomats and people trying to sell you used cars or houses that are falling apart or are foreclosed on. But anyway, these are things to think about. Another thing that people should pay more attention to is really this growing epidemic of reckless driving. There are more and more web pages and websites that are dealing with this problem. One of the issues, there are several that have not been dealt with in the healthcare and insurance controversy, is the cost of reckless driving and the medical cost for the people who have been injured and severely injured. It's not cheap. One guy had been hit three times. His surgery, he's had over, I'd say close to, with a total of about $300,000 in medical expenses, which were covered. But, you know, the people who are safe drivers, who follow the traffic laws, and who don't tailgate, who don't play bumper tag, or signal when they're going to turn, and don't race and pass on a one-way street in a school district, and this has happened, are the people who are driving up auto insurance costs. And these, along with that, the medical costs associated with the auto insurance industry. So it's something that people should start thinking about. And I've talked to other talked to policemen, and we think that strictly enforcing the traffic laws should be a source of revenue that has been ignored by both the local municipalities, the states, and the local government, the state governments. Now, I understand in California, when somebody's hit with a traffic fine, the money does not go to the CHP, the California Highway Patrol, and they're complaining about that. It goes to the local municipality, but maybe there ought to be some revenue sharing here and start to enhance the revenue by strictly enforcing the traffic laws. One thing I don't understand, and there's a practical aspect to this, these tinted windows. You can't see who's in there, and if that driver is involved in some nefarious conduct or hits somebody, and he or she cannot be identified because of those tinted windows. And I thought they were illegal. And another thing is, perhaps all of us who have driver's license, and many of us do, should have maybe every 10 years undergo a driver's test at the DMV to renew enhance our driving skills, because as we get older, we don't react as quickly, and our senses are not as sharp as they were when we first got our license at 18. So it's something that people should start thinking about, because it all ties in to the overall cost of auto insurance and the med pay that's associated with it. And interestingly, I don't see, and I have not heard, anybody talking about the auto medical insurance cost. None of these congressmen, none of these commentators, and surely all of them have driver's licenses. So it's something that everybody listening should think. By the way, you're free to call in. You're free to Twitter. Call in is 1-347-633-9620. I don't know where Tony Hall is. He said he was going to call in, and I don't see anything. But anyway, we'll try to have him on again later, another time. We'll be back on it Thursday at 5 p.m., same time, to accommodate our listeners on the Eastern Seaboard. So these are issues that people need to start thinking about, especially if you're concerned about paying these high costs of auto insurance, which goes up whether you are a good driver or not. They still go up for everybody when the cost of doing business goes up in the area that you drive in, or the state you drive in. Incidentally, isn't it interesting that medical insurance companies or medical insurers cannot operate or sell their policies across state lines, yet your auto insurer can? Isn't it? It's an interesting contradiction. And some of these auto insurance companies also sell health insurance and life insurance, annuities, and all that. So nobody has brought that up, but use that muscle between your ears and start contacting these congressmen there and congresswomen and saying, hey, these are issues you're not even talking about, but yet our pocketbook's affected. So, and some of these commentators, some of the dumbest people I have heard in 40 years of broadcasting are on the air, and you wonder, do these people have an agenda? Are they just dumbed down, or are they just ignorant or lazy or what? And on public radio especially, we used to get this when I was in public radio. When people didn't like something, would call up and ask you to correct it, or they'd yell at you or whatever, and it would always get down to, hey, you're being underwritten by the public, our taxes, our grants and foundations, and you ought to be accountable, and you ought to clean up your act or clear out. And I would say this and offer this to people who complain, you moan and groan about public media. that, hey, your taxes have gone to pay for NPR, for public broadcasting, and your local public broadcaster, or TV or radio. And if there's something that's broadcast that needs correcting or explaining, or something that's patently false or fraudulent, you should call up the station manager and complain, and the person who puts this out over the airways or over the tube or over the cable. It's your money. And, you know, I hear people complain all the time, but that's as far as it goes. So if you don't do anything, if you don't stand up, speak out, and even shout, then you deserve what you get. And you get no sympathy and don't expect it. The other thing, another political fiction has just come up. Somebody else brought this up about the Matthew Shepard scam. Jack Cashel, the famous author, and he gets in this in his book. It's still in print. You can get it on Amazon or you can get it from him. What's the Matter with California? Of course, there is a lot. But he gets into the Matthew Shepard story, and it ain't what they're putting out there. It's one of these political fictions that this kid, they call him a teenager, but he wasn't a teenager, I think he was in early 20s, was a victim of homophobes. The fact of the matter, and this is a new phrase, is that, yes, they killed him, and it was brutal, it was ugly, and they deserved to be tried and convicted, which they were. However, it wasn't as these homosexuals and lesbians and NAMBLAs and the propagandists are putting it out. This was a dope deal gone bad. These people were all involved in drugs. In fact, Shepard was supposed to have had a relationship with one of his killers. And I also, I'm trying to confirm this, that mother made a deal with the convicted killers and the DA. Now, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but this is what's coming out, that the two killers were never to talk about the case. They couldn't make public statements, and you haven't seen any, you haven't heard any, and they couldn't be writing books or articles or being interviewed. Incidentally, one of the killers was shipped off to a state prison in West Virginia. And these were little guys, and you know what happens with these young, fresh meat that comes into a hardened prison. So I'll leave it at that. The other thing that people should think about is, everyone is concerned about the overcrowding in prisons, the local jails. Think about this. What are these district attorneys and these judges and these court clerks and these staff attorneys and these court clerks getting paid? You know, they're all paid by the public. They're in the public trough. And some of them, a growing number of them, have their own political and sexual preference agenda. And in fact, the marriage controversy in the California State Supreme Court was so bad that one of the legal papers brought out an article, published an article, showing these staff attorneys who were brought their sexual preference into the workplace and were protesting the passage of the California state ban on gay lesbian marriage. You know, you got to wonder, hey. When people used to be in the federal government, that if you went in as a federal employee, you were barred from any type of political activity. You could vote and should have voted, but you were not allowed to wear come in park with bumper stickers with political messages on them. You couldn't wear bumper buttons or even collect campaign contributions. You were barred under the Hatch Act, which came out during the, I think it was Rutherford B. Hayes administration. He was also a Union general and one of those from Ohio. An interesting book has come out, since we're on the subject of Ohio, has come out on Warren G. Harding, or not a middle initial, G stands for Gamaliel. His mother wanted a name that sounded like had a biblical sound to it, so she concocted this name, Gamaliel. I've never seen it anyplace else, except when I did some research on Warren G. Harding. Anyway, this book is out, and it's got some interesting new things that have never come out before. The fact that he was cheating on his wife, of course, he there was a table in the White House, which was known as the lay of the land, in which he was messing around with the women that weren't his wife, at least one. And there were a lot of love letters which were concealed until recently, and a historian, a writer, had gotten a hold of them, and I think these things, or the contents, have been published. But anyway, what it turns out, it had Harding run in 1916, run for president instead of Charles Evan Hughes, who was a U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice. Had he run, the United States would not have entered World War One, and for a lot of reasons that one of his amours had a connection to the Kaiser Wilhelm. Bismarck had been long gone. He'd been fired by the Kaiser about 20 years beforehand. I think he died in 1899. And there was a connection to Teddy Roosevelt, who was very bellicose about the United States should get into World War One, and he was very, in his terms, bully about it. So this is fascinating. What if? The what ifs of history. So I don't know where, the exact name of that book, but you ought to check it out. It should provide some good reading and a new perspective on Warren G. Harding. His birthday's next month, and we'll be doing some specials on it. He was also the first president to visit Canada, and a state visit, and he was the first president to die in San Francisco, in the Sheraton Palace Hotel. Those of you who come here or will come here and stay there, it's a nice hotel. It's a classic. And he died of a heart attack, although some of the rumors at the time and still today was that he was poisoned by either his wife or somebody else. Oh, and incidentally, today is the death of Plautius. He died from poisoned mushrooms. Those of you who have seen that excellent PBS, you know, when PBS does something good, it's great. I, Plautius, which based on, I forget the English author's name, but it was a great work of scholarship, and he made a great historical novel out of it. Actually, there's a lot of history in it. And Plautius was the guy who conquered the Brits, as a matter of fact. He had a bad leg, and he was part of the Claudians, that tribe in ancient Rome. But he was poisoned today. So his nephew, I think it was... succeeded him, Nero, or Nero came before, but Claudius is very clever, and he played dumb, and that's how he survived. Maybe that's how some of these politicians are. They're playing dumb, and that's how they survive, and maybe when election time comes, they'll say, I really didn't understand all this legislation. Give me a break. Don't be surprised if that happens. So just be aware that these people can be very devious, and that's how they survive in politics and in business. The other thing is, don't sit around and complain about what's going on in Congress. I understand even people feel the same way about the state legislatures and their local government. Don't complain and moan and groan. Get on the phone, get on your email, send out letters. The snail mail still works. And tell your representatives that, hey, I'm paying your salary. I'm paying your health care. I'm paying your retirement. I'm paying your franking privileges. That's free mail and all the money that they save from that they don't spend on mail. They pocket, like Rostenkowski, the controversial late representative. I think he's still living, from Illinois, Dan Rostenkowski. I had met him some time ago when I was in college. But these are the things that go on, and hey, it's a great life, and it pays well, let's put it that way. And I understand I'm going to try to have him back on, Patrick Butler, that a lot of people in Chicago did not want the Olympics because, first of all, they're already overtaxed. And here's something that wasn't well publicized that Mayor Daley II did. He sold the parking meters and the revenue from them, that whole operation, it was sold to a private corporation. And I understand that people, I haven't strictly verified this, that people have to monitor those parking meters 24 hours a day, and the rates of to park, cost of parking has skyrocketed. And of course, these guys are probably laughing all the way to their offshore bank accounts. But this is something that, you know, it's easy to do this for cities. And any of you who drive and have gotten a parking ticket, you know how hawkish these people are, these parking, these meter maids, that the minute that red flag goes up or even before, they're right there writing you a ticket. And one of the scandals, and look at those tickets very carefully, because this is a scandal that's gone on here in California, that some of these meter maids and meter men have been pre-writing the tickets for the offense, and they have a whole book of these. And depending on the offense, they sign them, and they're, the time which they write in. And then, you know, whatever offense you've done, whether it's parking in a loading zone or just overtime parking, they're right there to slam it on your windshield or stick it in your between your hood and your fender. So you need to pay attention to those things, unless you just want to throw money away to the parking control people. But, these are some of the sneaky things that these people have been doing. And once you get that ticket, you know how hard it is to fight these tickets and the time involved. And, you know, you're already paying their salary. So don't make it easy on these people that they can get away with this stuff, because they have been. And it's time for the public who are victimized by this, drivers and people who own the cars, should say, hey, you know, do your job, but do it fairly, competently, and effectively. You know, all of us are concerned about parking wherever you're at, but there's no need to, in effect, rape the motorists. The other thing, again, my caller has not called in. I don't know what happened to Tony. Excuse me. The other thing people should be aware of is, again, I'll bring this up with the growing abuse of these school teachers, these principals, and these school boards. That, of course, you've heard about that six-year-old boy in, I think it was Florida, who was a Boy Scout. And he was proud of what he was into and what he had accomplished. So he brought something from the Boy Scouts to school, which was under that school district's rules, was viewed as a weapon. So they were spending all this time to terrorize this boy, to punish him, but it's terrorism, to send him to reform school for 45 days, which the taxpayers of Florida or that school district will pay for the reform school. Also, the time he's out of school, he may fall back in his studies and may have to repeat a year. I don't know if he's in the first or second grade or what, but these are things that people don't think about. And what's happened is these school teachers and these principals, a lot of them are really out of control. There's other things that have gone on. Among the scandals that have occurred, deal with monitoring kids in their gyms, their toilets, and their showers. There was a case in Maine where one of the teachers had drilled some holes in the locker room of the children. I think they were in middle school, and he was videotaping them. So this goes on, and these pedophiles are on the web. It's not only targeting the military in their showers, and this has happened, and we've talked about it on Amicus Veritas, these pornographers and these necrophiliacs. You know, another thing that's disgusting, and we don't, it's not that well publicized, is like when a famous person, a movie star, or a politician, or even a live politician, they did this to Arnold Schwarzenegger. When they will spy on them in the showers or in their locker rooms and take pictures and publish frontal nude. They shouldn't even publish nude photos of these people. I call them homosexual necrophiliacs. It's really disgusting, and you know, people should complain about these things. There ought to be standards. There ought to be decorum. Respect the dead. When Arnold Schwarzenegger was in his muscle business and that activity of his life, somebody published when he ran in the recall in California, to recall Governor Gray Davis. Someone published one of the homosexual prostitution papers, the Bay Reporter, published a frontal nude photo of Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it was just horrible. Now, interestingly, they had backed Dianne Feinstein for the governorship, but, to be associated with people like that, the Bay Reporter, a male prostitution and pedophile paper. So these are things that people should be aware of, and there should be respect for the living as well as the dead. There's no need for this. And, again, what these type of people do in their private life, as long as they keep it private, they don't set the dogs a-barking or scare the horses, that's their thing. But when they bring it out into the streets and try to homosexualize the military, we'll get into that, who's really behind the abolition of don't ask, don't tell. People are going to be surprised, the type of people and what they're involved in this campaign to overturn the Don't Ask, Don't Tell. For those of you who are not familiar with history, there have been gays in the military, in the militaries of the world, going back to Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, the Turks when they were running around trying to conquer Europe. They would abduct. They were traveling, and some of the Turkish pirates were sailing as far north as Latvia and Lithuania, and they were abducting those young boys, bringing them back to Turkey, and they had a thing called the Janissaries. That was a military, part of their military, and these kids were brought up to be shock troops of the Sultan, and, of course, the Turks were also known as Sodomites. I think the term was, they used to call it the Greek vice, but the Turks were into it too. And those of you who've seen the movie Lawrence of Arabia, there is a scene there where Peter O'Toole, played Lawrence, was raped, although it was discreetly handled. He was whipped first and then sodomized by the Turkish colonel, who was Jose Ferrer. Interestingly, Jose Ferrer played a JAG in the movie Caine Mutiny. For those of you who, who want to study about the JAGs, because very little is written about the Judge Advocate Corps of the military, it's very interesting. Some of the people who have been JAGs, and we have only one in Congress, and that is the senator from South Carolina, Air Force JAG. But I want to thank you, folks, who have tuned in, and of course you can download this and listen to it at length and at your leisure. And we will be having more interviews. I just got my computer fixed. Hope it stays fixed. And I just have to edit the stuff, edit all these things. I have some very interesting interviews. The first female veterinarian in Afghanistan needs some tweaking. Her voice was too low, so I'm not going to put that up on the web. And then my old friend Mel Bell, a great lawyer, talking about the death of his iguana and animal rights and how he got the Russians to pay up for the survivors of KL-007, the plane that they shot down. And, of course, there's still some mystery about what really happened to Congressman Larry McDonald. There are some people who claim or who think that he is still alive in some Russian gulag. In fact, Accuracy in Media, Mr. Irvine, when he was alive, and he was in Army Intelligence in World War II, one of the founders of Accuracy in Media, did raise the issue about what really happened to Congressman Larry McDonald. He was a congressman from Georgia, I think. So it could very well be that, you know, the Russians lied at first that, you know, that plane had overstrayed, or at least that's what they said, into Soviet airspace. And it's very easy to do, considering the flight pattern from Alaska over Hakita near Japan and then the island that the Russians have still not returned to Japan. I think it's Hakita, if I'm not mistaken. Excuse me. But anyway, that's a mystery that's still unsolved. But it's fascinating how Mel Bell, I got the Russians to pay the damages. And they did something on Bhopal, too, the big Union Carbide pollution, killed a lot of people up there in Bhopal, India. So I want to, again, encourage you to go to YouTube, my YouTube sites, Amicus Veritas, and we've got a new series coming out The American Terrorists Chronicles, and I was working on it today, and talk about the stories of the incidents, the bombing of cop cars, police stations, courthouses. There's a lot there that doesn't get publicized, and these people like the Ayers and Bernadine Dorn are still running around, living their lifestyle, probably snorting, you know. They're always up here in Northern California to vacation, and it's interesting. Northern California is known as marijuana. Incidentally, those of you who grew up during the 60s and tried marijuana, you knew it was what we used to call a mellow yellow and all of that. Well, one of the problems with the new crop of marijuana is this stuff can be lethal. And again, if you're smoking that stuff and driving, your senses and your awareness are impaired. So this is something to think about, that this new crop of marijuana is not the mellow yellow or the really nice pot that people smoked and snorted and sniffed during the 60s and 70s. So it's something people should be aware of when you hear this, we want to legalize marijuana. It's not the same stuff. It's much more potent, and in fact, people who smoke, and they have gotten into accidents, when they were driving, the stuff is lethal. It's just like drinking a lot of alcohol, over-drinking alcohol. Some people can handle the stuff and drive. It's not recommended. Again, I do have up there, when I talked to this Russian diplomat several years ago, what he did, he had to attend a lot of diplomatic functions. Maybe he was spying, I don't know. But he said that to avoid a hangover, what he would do was drink a small cup of olive oil, which coated his stomach. And so that prevented his system from absorbing the vodka or the scotch or whatever. So I found that it works for me. So, you know, that's a tip. You don't have to wait till New Year's to find out, or Christmas. And also, I was told that if you do imbibe too much, try eating an apple or two. There's something in the apple, maybe the pectin, that helps clean your system. One of the other things, a lot of the Latinos, they take that, I forget what it is, that kind of tripe, and they use that in a chili sauce to clean your system out. But, you know, if you're going to drink sensibly. And if you should, I believe, one of the reasons that the Europeans are different from Americans when it comes to drinking is they teach their children how to drink. And that's something we don't do over here, and we should do. Because, you know, it's okay to enjoy a good glass of wine. I happen to like a nice glass of vodka. I used to drink gin and tonic. When I lived back east in the hot summers, can't do that anymore, Tom Collins. But we should teach our children, those of us who enjoy alcoholic beverages, to drink responsibly, to learn how to drink. So again, we cover a lot of subjects. I had to cover for Tony. He didn't. I don't know what happened. So we hope to get him again. Schedule him again, and thank you for... this little trip through history and politics and a lot of other current events that are going on and some practical tips. This is Peter Paul Verzola working with the New Shadow. Thank you for listening.
Say, Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.